Macintosh Folklore Radio, written by Andy Hertzfeld and Company, and read by Derek Warren. Quick, hide in this closet, August 1983. In 1980, Apple endured another reorganization, splitting off a new disk division headed by John Vinard. The new division was responsible for developing a hard disk, codenamed Pippin, and a next-generation floppy disk technology, codenamed Twiggy. Both were intended to be used by the Lisa project and eventually across Apple's entire product line. I had already been involved with the Twiggy project, writing some early diagnostics for Twiggy using an Apple II. However, when Rich Williams was asked to transfer to the disk division rather than myself, I felt lucky since focusing exclusively on disk software seemed very limiting. Waz's design for the Apple II floppy disk was way ahead of the rest of the industry, so Apple felt confident in continuing to innovate and extending its lead. Twiggy was a fairly ambitious project, more than quadrupling the capacity of standard floppy disks by doubling the data rate and using higher density media. Other innovative tricks were used, like slowing down the rotation speed of the disk when working on the outermost tracks in order to cram more data on them. The Twiggy drive's use of a WAS-style disk controller created a problem for the Lisa designers. The controller required exact timing from the microprocessor and couldn't tolerate interrupts as a result. This was suitable for a simple system like the Apple II, but unacceptable for the more sophisticated Lisa. The hardware team solved the problem by including a little Apple II chipset, complete with its own memory and microprocessor, inside the Lisa for the sole purpose of controlling the Twiggy drives. The Lisa supported an optional external hard drive through a built-in parallel port. As the Twiggy designers encountered difficulties in achieving an acceptable error rate, Lisa came to rely on the hard drive instead. In addition to the reliability problems, Twiggy drives were also slower than anticipated. This was partly due to the reliability problems, and partly because of the variable motor speed tricks, which required extra time before the motor speed stabilized after each change in speed. Besides, the Lisa operating system designers were used to working on systems that swapped memory from disk, which wasn't feasible at floppy disk speeds. Soon, the hard disk became mandatory, upping the minimum price of a Lisa by more than $1,000. Lisa was announced to great fanfare in January 1983, even though it wasn't ready to ship. There were problems in a number of areas, but the biggest one was the low yield of the Twiggy drives, whose high error rate greatly limited production. Lisas were shipped to customers in June of that year, even though there continued to be production and reliability problems with the disk drives. Meanwhile, the Mac team was beginning to panic. We were using a single Twiggy drive as our floppy disk, and we didn't have a hard disk to fall back on. It looked like the Twiggy drive was never going to be reliable or cost-effective enough for the Macintosh, but we had no alternative. If we couldn't find a suitable replacement quickly enough, we would have to slip the entire project schedule indefinitely. Fortunately, we were aware of Sony's new 3.5-inch floppy drive that had begun to ship in the spring of 1983 through Hewlett-Packard, Sony's development partner. George Crowe, the engineer who designed the Mac's analog board, was a former HP employee and was sold on the superiority of the Sony drives. He procured a drive through his friends at HP and proposed to Bob Belleville that we figure out how to interface it with the Mac. In the meantime, we would try to negotiate a deal with Sony. The Sony drive looked great, especially when compared with the Twiggy. It used the same data rate, but on smaller disks that could fit in a shirt pocket. Best of all, the media was encased in a hard plastic shell, making it much less fragile and more convenient to handle. Steve Jobs was finally ready to acknowledge reality and give up on the Twiggy drive. When he saw the Sony drive, he loved it and immediately wanted to adapt it for the Mac. But instead of doing the obvious thing and striking a deal with Sony, Steve decided that Apple should take what it had learned from Twiggy and engineer its own version of a 3.5-inch drive. We would supposedly work with our Japanese manufacturing partner, Alps Electronics, who manufactured the Apple II floppy drives at a very low cost. This seemed like suicide to George Crowe and Bob Belleville. The Mac was supposed to ship in less than 7 months, and it was preposterous to think that we could get a 3.5-inch disk drive into production by then. And that was assuming we could do it at all, given the disk division's dismal track record. However, Steve was convinced that we should do our own drive, and told Bob to cease all work on the Sony drive. He instructed Rod Holt, Bob, and George to fly to Japan to meet with Alps to initiate a crash project to develop a workable 3.5-inch drive. Bob and George grudgingly went along with the Alps program, but they were certain the team would discover that we couldn't pull it off in the allotted time frame. They hatched an alternative plan to continue working with Sony surreptitiously against Steve's wishes. Larry Kenyon was given a Sony drive to interface to the Mac, but he was told to keep it hidden, especially from Steve. Bob and George also arranged meetings with Sony to discuss the customizations that Apple desired and to hammer out the beginnings of a business deal. This dual strategy entailed frequent meetings with both Alps and Sony, with the added burden of keeping the Sony meetings secret from Steve. The meetings in Japan were easily taken care of, since Steve simply didn't attend them. But it became a little awkward when Sony employees had to visit Cupertino. Sony sent a young engineer named Hidei Komoto to work with Larry Kenyon to spec out the modifications that Apple required. Hidei was sitting in Larry's cubicle with George when we suddenly heard Steve Jobs' voice as he unexpectedly strode into the software area. George knew that Steve would wonder who Komoto-san was if he saw him. Thinking quickly, he immediately tapped Komoto-san on his shoulder and spoke hurriedly, pointing at the nearby janitorial closet. "Dozo, quick! Hide in this closet, please, now!" Komoto-san looked confused, but he got up from his seat and hurried into the dark janitorial closet. He stayed there for 5 minutes or so until Steve departed and the coast was clear. George and Larry apologized to Komoto-san for their unusual request. "No problem," he replied. "But American business practices, they are very strange. Very strange." As we had predicted, a few weeks later, the Alps team came back with an estimate of 18 months for putting their disk drive into production, and we had to abandon the project. When Bob Belleville revealed that he and George had kept the Sony alternative alive, Steve swallowed his pride and thanked them for disobeying him and doing the right thing. The Sony drives eventually worked out well, and it's hard to imagine what the Mac would have been like without them.